Since 2013, Bombas has donated over 100 million socks, underwear, and T-shirts to those facing homelessness. If we counted those on air, this ad would last over 1,157 days. But if we counted the time it takes to make a donation possible, it would take just a few clicks. Because every time you make a purchase, Bombas donates an item to someone who needs it.
Go to bombas.com/Wondery and use code Wondery for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com/Wondery, code Wondery.
Life is full of personal wins, whether it's cleaning your house, getting that dream car, or checking off your to-do list. Winning at life is a great feeling. And with the State Farm Personal Price Plan, you can keep winning when you create an affordable price just for you by bundling home and auto. So give yourself a round of applause. Talk to a State Farm agent today to learn how you can bundle and save with the Personal Price Plan. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there. Prices are based on rating plans that vary by state. Coverage options are selected by the customer. Availability, amount of discounts and savings, and eligibility vary by state.
Greetings, nerd children. Welcome to another candy-filled episode of the Nerdist Podcast. Couple of dates to throw at you. May 26th, Nerdist Podcast Live with Robert Kirkman at Meltdown. Robert Kirkman, creator of Walking Dead, Invincible, come on. That's going to be an amazing show. Also, June 4th of the Showbox in Seattle, June 10th of the Magic Bag in Detroit, June 11th at the Granada Theater in Dallas, and then July 23rd, Nerdist Podcast Live at San Diego Comic-Con. You can get all the ticket links on Nerdist.com for that. And a hearty, almost slightly too long, uncomfortable hug to Hover.com for sponsoring the Nerdist Podcast yet again. So Hover is all about making domain registration simple. Domain registration sites have become insane because they usually try to throw a bunch of different services at you, but Hover does not do this. You go to the site to register a domain, that's all they do. They're not going to try to push a bunch of crap on you. They also have a no-hold policy for customer service calls Monday through Friday, 9 a.m. to 8 p.m. Eastern. That is unheard of, except for in this case. You will actually get a live person when you call, and they will not put you on hold. So go to Hover.com, set up email addresses, forward email addresses, redirect domains to other website addresses, create URL extensions, set privacy controls, and they've really tried to pin this down to as few clicks as possible. You want to transfer a domain? No problem. You go on, you enter the name of the URL you want to transfer. They will give you the next steps and help you track the progress and make sure that it gets transferred over, no sweat. If you need a new domain, use the offer code Nerdist and get 10% off by going to Hover.com/Nerdist. Thank you to Hover for your continuing support. And let us enjoy the Nerdist Podcast number 91 with comedy juggernaut Patton Oswalt.
Now entering Nerdist.com.
Matt, Jonah's got a lot of work to do anyway.
Art department has finished up our...
All right, well, would you mind closing the door on the way out there?
Oh.
Bye, Jonah.
And let it hit you in the ass. Oh, if you could make sure that happens.
Matthew.
I'll just talk
Hi, Matt.
Loud.
Just talk extra loud. So here's the situation. We're using our snazzy radio station here in the E/Comcast/NBC Universal building, and... Three of the five microphones are not working.
Well, you may as well be in a garage.
We might as well.
May as well be.
We might as well just be recording with our iPhones.
Yeah, get like one of those weird Y connectors into an iPad.
Yeah, this is like Marin's garage, but without the cats. So it's just us. So I released Jonah back into the wild because his mic doesn't work. So I'm hanging on to Matthew, who can maybe.
What I'll do. I'll record me. I'll just put me in my pocket like when I do my sets. And then we'll see.
How many sets are you doing now?
There's some.
Okay.
Here and there.
Anyway, Patton Oswalt is here on the podcast. I'm so sorry. I don't know why this... I don't know.
Wow.
I mean, I even had the engineer come down, and he was like, I don't know why it's not working. There goes
For
Jonah.
For the listeners at home, Jonah was just standing wistfully by the window.
Know, Jonah needs that theme music that plays in Stripes every time something bad happens to Boomer. Drops the pizza and the laundry. His girlfriend leaves him.
Uh-huh, exactly.
What I'm saying is Jonah's going to enlist right now.
Yeah.
In the army. Shave his head.
He managed to barely squeak out 5 push-ups and is feeling his mortality. Time to go to the army.
That was the last time we we ever saw.
So here's why I mean, I'm thrilled that you're on the podcast. I've been wanting you to come on the show for a long time, but for the longest time, I sensed you're really busy, and I didn't want to bother you with it. And so I ran into you at the Ferguson show and just kind of offhandedly said, you know, you're invited to come on whenever you want. And you were like, I thought you didn't want me on because you didn't ask me. I'm like, oh, I didn't know. It was one of those like nice guy misunderstandings.
Yeah, I get really uncomfortable with there are things that I very, very, very much want to do. And sometimes I get to know the people that do them, but I never know how to approach. Because to me, it feels like, am I bum rushing people? So what I'll either do is, but there's never, I've never found a happy medium. I either completely ignore them or I get so in their face about it. I decide, well, if I'm going to ask, I'm going to just ask like I'm a wheelbarrow full of tools that's been pushed down a hill. And I'm just, it's just this huge tumbling storm of metal.
Why is Patton running at me?
Yeah.
Oh my God. Yeah.
So yeah, so that was the tack I took with you. I just figured he's got to be booked up through the next few months. I don't want to bother. You know, I'm his friend. I want to go, hey, put me on your show. Put me on your show.
No, I've been wanting you on for a really long time. Oh, and
early on, Chris even said, I'd like to have Patton on, but he's so busy. I don't want to ask him.
Well, you were in New York for a while, and then you moved back, and then... Yeah. And then, you know, because I follow you on Twitter, I've just been seeing all the shit you're up to. And then you finished your book and your book just came out. And so, you know, I never want to be the guy who is trying to skeeze off his friends and be like, hey, you want to come be on my podcast? Which I still think is an awful word. I wish I could come up with a different name than podcast.
But, well, you know, but what I'm lucky in that all of my friends that have podcasts have really good podcasts. I don't have anybody that's doing anything. That's, in other words, it would only help them if I did the podcast, and you know what I mean. So all my friends have things that I am excited about doing.
We just started a new podcast called the Mages of Althea, and we'd really do you want to come on? It's only 3 hours.
We're down in Long Beach. If you want to come down here,
actually, could you pick me up because we're recording in Long Beach?
Actually, in the shipping port.
Yeah,
Dean Haglund drove down.
What do you think? You're better than him?
Yeah, I'm just saying. If you want to, Dean drove down. But if you're not cool with that,
it's not gonna go, guys. Oh, you will get a verbal scalding on the next episode, Patton Oswalt.
There are, especially now with like, we're at the point now. I am blown away whenever I hear a podcast that sounds bad. In other words, the sound quality is bad. In 2011, it reminded me of when I was living in San Francisco and you would see a bad Chinese restaurant that had been open for a long time. And you're like, how in the world is this open? Because there are so many amazing Chinese restaurants, cheap Chinese restaurants that are five-star you know, quality of food. So how does a bad one get away with? So at this point, clearly the technology to make a podcast sound good is at everyone's
well within our grasp.
It is not a hard thing to get now. Basically, you can get the stuff you need almost in a checkout line in a Rite Aid.
Absolutely,
it's become the pocket calculator. It's hit pocket calculator stage.
Yeah, you can get a little iHome microphone or something and just stick it into your phone.
Yeah,
I think you say this today
we're in a super high end studio right now.
This
too.
This looks like the lab in CSI Miami where we are right now. It really is where we're sitting, and three of the mics don't work.
Any second now, Caruso's going to come bursting through the door with his ginger cock in hand, ready to make some sort of smug comment about a dead body.
Yeah, looks like this pod's got 3 P's.
Yeah!
This pod's going to need an extra cast. Oh.
What?
What's his name? I've heard his name on this. Horatio Cockman.
It would be so cool if he would allow him, if they would do one episode where he tries to do a joke and stops himself. Where he goes, I guess this tsunami means that, hang on, wait a minute. A wave? No, not a wave. And then he just kind of, and there's like 5 seconds, and then they just hit the Who song. Like he just,
yeah!
But it just goes, you know what, not worth it.
Yeah, it's not, ugh.
Well, I guess apples don't equal, Who are you?
No, for CSI.
Miami, right.
It's... You won't get fooled again. Yeah! Bam, bam. I'm still waiting for the CSI franchise that uses Boris the Spider. That would be, there's the one. Boris the Spider.
There are so many CSIs now, they could literally just be really specific, like CSI Adams Family, and it's just all the CSIs that take place within the Adams Family compound. It's just
start
a weird mashup.
Classic shows.
Yes, yes.
CSI Gilligan's Island.
Yes, yes, and which is sort of like, sort of the was the focus of your Wired article. We both had articles in the same issue, and yours was just like, we've got to stop just mashing shit up.
Yeah, that's all it is now. There's nothing left, apparently. And it's all, it's actually, it's weird how that article is kind of reflective of what I've been going through these past couple of months in that, you know, now that the book is out and you go, you know this, Chris, you go promote things, if you know, when you do like your show and you got to go promote it, it's the least creative thing you can do. There is absolutely nothing creative in promoting a show. It is, you find the same 8 or 9 anecdotes, you try to find a way to tell them funny and make things, and you answer the same 20 questions, and it feels like it just dulls your senses.
I think
as far as thinking stuff up,
we really just need to kind of get to the point where, because what we're really saying is you should just walk on a morning news show with your pants down. It's like, buy my thing, please.
But what happened to me was during the promo process, the downtime I had when I thought I'd write something new or work on new material, I was so fried that these past couple months, all I've become is just this media consumer. I'm just mindlessly consuming everything. Every show I can download on iTunes, every podcast, and I feel like it's like in my head, I've made those things my work. Mm-hmm. In other words, like, well, I gotta finish. I gotta get caught up on Justified. I gotta get no, I don't. It's there's no assignment. Like there. That's supposed to be there for you to enjoy.
You don't want to be, want to be the asshole at the cultural water cooler who's like, "I didn't see that."
Right.
Oh,
exactly.
What? You're not watching that show? I can't keep up. There aren't enough hours.
Yeah,
in
exactly.
The day.
There literally are not. There are so many. It's like there are so many good things now, or at least so many. The one thing that I don't know if I'm proud or it's because I'm just so exhausted. I've never gotten into any reality shows. I don't follow any.
I don't
either. Reality shows, and I can't imagine how horrible and empty my life would be if I were following American Idol and Celebrity Apprentice. And
I've just been following Paul F. Tompkins's review on Vulture, which are so goddamn funny.
I'm telling you, man, those remind me of when you would read Mad Magazine back in the day, and when they would do a parody of a movie that you couldn't see because it was rated R. But then you felt like, okay, I got the gist of this. I know what this movie's about. I know what's wrong with it. Like, they would, it was almost like they, so it's like, he is saving me and, you know, hours of my life every week. I can just read that thing.
Actually be entertained.
And actually laugh and feel like, oh, that was time well spent.
And I feel like we're going to get to the point where we're going to have to create the machines that jack into our spinal columns on the Matrix. But instead of learning Kung Fu, most people just be like, I just watched season 2 of Justified. Really? You could have learned anything.
Yeah, their body's trembling.
You could have learned anything.
I finally watched every episode of Angel. Wait a minute. Can you fly a helicopter? No. I'm gonna get to that, but
oh, I watched Airwolf.
I gotta download Fringe next. Gotta get caught up on Fringe. I don't got that yet. But yeah, although the one thing bad about Paul F. Tompkins' Vulture, the column in Vulture, is there are some things he writes about that make me go look for that piece of footage. Like when he described the Jamie Foxx Will I Am performance, made me want to go find it and watch it, and it was as bad as he described it. You couldn't believe that this was on television.
All
to promote this. You can tell if they put that much money and energy into promoting a movie, it can't be good.
Right?
It just can't be good. Because I remember, did you ever work on the MTV Movie Awards?
No, I went to a couple, but I never actually wrote on them.
I wrote on them, and one of the years I wrote on them, they were doing Wild Wild West, and that was the whole, So they got Will Smith, but he's there to, I'm here to promote Wild Wild West, and they did this massive musical number. I'm sure you can find it on YouTube. Where,
and then Stevie Wonder comes out.
Stevie Wonder comes out, and they're doing, like, it's like this huge Western, like, bar fight kind of thing, and he's doing his Wild Wild West rap, you know, and they rehearsed that thing all week. He had like an entourage of 300 people, and they had to be they all had to be handled and corralled, and they were screaming at people and making everyone miserable. And at least there was like 30 dancers. So at least $1 million went into just staging this giant dance number to promote the Wild Wild West.
To be fair, it did have a large steampunk spider in it.
It did have,
as driven by Kevin Klein. That's what it was. It was a large steampunk spider creature.
Yeah. Which by the way, they had taken out of a rejected script for the Superman movie that John Peters wanted to do.
Yeah.
And he was like, I just want him to fight a giant spider at the end. And they said, well, I don't know that that's one of his villains. I don't know why there'd be a giant spider. Well, I want it to be mechanical, and I want him to wear all black. Because Matrix is big, so he's all black.
It's got to be all black. Oh, it wasn't Kevin Klein. Who was the villain? Kevin Klein was Artemis.
Brana.
Kenneth Branagh. Yeah.
Kenneth Branagh.
Kenneth Branagh. And
just sitting and making, and nothing kids like more in a summer movie than black and cripple jokes, just back and forth. Yeah. They love
it's a real
watching.
Summer pick-me-up jam.
It's a summer, yeah, and then you go hit, yeah. you're fresh from the beach,
yep.
you're a little sunblind,
yep.
you're, you know, and then let's go watch Black and Cripple Jokes.
Yep.
Could have been
in a Civil War setting.
TV show.
Well,
that
but
could have been a great movie.
It could have been.
It could have been awesome.
God damn it. Let's, you know.
Sonnenfeld?
There's a really great, probably was Barry Sonnenfeld,
after
Men in Black. But, you know, there's such an insane remake thing that's way worse than it's ever been. And there was a website called Wire and Twine has this really great t-shirt that's like a hand-drawn illustration of Gene Wilder, and it just says in this really beautiful font, "Stop the remakes." And and it just seems really, I think it probably came out around the time Willy Wonka got rebooted.
Yeah.
But you know, just the fact that they're already talking about the Batman's beyond Nolan's Batman, that they're going to reboot it again.
Well, that's the word you just said that is causing, it's the word reboot.
Yeah.
Not only are they doing remakes, they can now remake a movie that they just made and go,
Spider-Man. Oh,
we're going to take a mulligan on that and do it this way.
It's like a meth addict is making you a sandwich, and every time he finishes it, you're like, "That looks good." You reach for it, and he just knocks it off the table. And goes, "Okay, okay, no, I'm gonna take some wheat bread, and then we're gonna put some lox, and then some peanut butter."
Well, Hollywood has become like a 4-year-old telling a story. So then Spider-Man fights Dr. Octopus,
okay.
And he saves. But
we just
Spider-Man's costume had an overcoat.
No, but we just made it.
In Harry that. Dr. Octopus, he was a lizard. He was a lizard.
What am I supposed to do with Sandman?
Not Sandman anymore. Then, what movie do I... You like, remember when it was bad enough when they would keep re-releasing different DVD versions of movies? Like, there were 9 versions of The Evil Dead.
Yes.
But now they're doing
the director's cut. The director's wife's cut.
Oh, the best is the Boomstick edition of Army of Darkness. It's
But
40 times.
But now they're doing that with just first run movies.
Yeah, it's pretty.
It's just happening right before our eyes. I don't even get to the DVDs anymore.
And the reboot. And I've complained about it on the podcast before. I didn't see it. It might be a great movie, but I doubt it. But the remake of Arthur was what hurt me inside, because I'm like, Dudley Moore created that character. You can't just do that. I can't say, you know, I think I'm going to make a Chaplin movie.
Right. Well, that was the same thing with when I remember when the Pink Panther came out, and I actually got really confused because I was like, you know, no one, as far as actual making up comedy, has better instincts than Steve Martin when you see him on talk shows and when he's creative.
Yeah.
So where did that instinct go with, oh, yeah, the character that is kind of an internationally known figure that this guy Peter Sellers kind of nailed? I'm not going to step into that. And then to step into it twice, like, what, dude? And he can create good stuff. Steve Martin can, so why would you?
I'm sure it's all about, like, film financing and studios. Like, we want to refresh these properties that people already know.
It's like the Honeymooners remake, the movie they made.
Oh, right.
I mean, that was Jackie Gleason's character.
I forgot about that.
Well, their argument is that we're doing it black. Although, what's the classic old... The classic old Hollywood story is the guy comes in the office. I got an idea. We're going to do The Wiz white. It's an old apocryphal story.
They say he's on down the road.
Although the thing that we probably don't know is, and I've seen this secondhand from friends of mine that have become, you know, wildly successful. Sometimes if there's a movie that you want to do, you part of the deal as well, then you'll go do this thing for us, and then you can go do. So a lot of times, if you see someone like a Steve Martin or you know someone that you really like, and you're going, oh my God, what the hell is they doing in that? It's so that they can have something else done.
Go make the weird indie movie that they want to make.
Yeah, no, exactly.
I wanted to punch my computer screen because of the news that they might reboot Time Bandits, which, like, how do you...
What?
Yeah, they want to reboot the Time Bandits franchise and aim it more at kids.
It's not a franchise.
That's what they called it.
It's not a franchise. It's a singular, perfect, self-contained universe. You can't go spinning off goofy adventures from that because they take on, literally, they take on God and evil. There's nothing else. What are they going to do with the second one? Take on, like... Lizzie Borden, like what's
they
the,
would just they yeah. would just start over. They would just yeah. start over. They want to reboot the franchise, and I that's
then they'll
actually
do it, then they'll do it with black little people.
That's what.
Then they'll do it. So they're remaking their reboot.
They're in talks to try to reboot it as a franchise of films aimed at kids, it just hurts me so. It hurt me so bad that we can't just leave the masterpieces alone. Like, you know, they did it right the first time. There's nothing more you can do to this that's going to make it better.
And, you know, there's plenty. This is why David Cronenberg's The Fly is so brilliant. Because there are plenty of movies that started with a great idea and didn't exploit it to its fullest extent. So that's the movie you remake. A movie that they had kind of the grain of an idea, and then they kind of sort of went, did something kind of weak with it. And then, you know, you do it the better version.
Mm-hmm.
Does that make sense? So, well, I mean, you know, there's a Jack Nicholson movie called Wolf that has one of the best first acts I've ever seen, and then the whole movie turns into a giant pile of shit. But the first act is so great, where he gets bitten by a werewolf and he basically starts becoming a wolf all the time.
Right.
Not just turning into a furry monster. He literally acts in his daily life the way a wolf would.
He pees on James Spader to mark his territory.
And there's no fear, and he overshoots everything, and people are like, what the hell are you doing? And he goes, I don't care. Like, there's just all these great little touches in his sense of, and then it just turns into two dudes in furry costumes fighting. It's just like, what the hell?
That happened to me with Hancock, where the first half of the movie, I was like, this is an awesome idea.
Right, yeah.
And then they introduced that whole other thing about them being angels or whatever. And I'm like, what are you doing?
Yeah.
No!
And it was apparently the original script was really dark and had went to places that would go. And they just sort of... And now, you know, again, I don't really understand this as much as I'm saying, but... You find out later as you get older that a lot of movies that you see were just scripts that were intended for other things.
Mm-hmm.
Like apparently Tears of the Sun, that Bruce was, started off as a Die Hard sequel.
Oh my God.
And then they just said, well, let's just make it a... And then I think Die Hard 4 started off as a different movie, and they just plug John McClane into this.
Oh my God.
Because if you watch the movie...
I like Die Hard 4.
But John McClane is not John McClane anymore. He suddenly... The fun thing about the Die Hard movies is it's an action guy that does not want to be a part of the action.
Right.
He knows his limits. He's like, I get winded easily. I'd really rather not do this. So you're like, wow. But now in Die Hard 4, he's just basically Superman.
Super cop, yeah.
Yeah, he like can't be killed, and he is... I learned to fly a helicopter. What?
you were just a cop.
What?
You were just a street smart cop, not a fucking helicopter pilot.
Yeah, it's so crazy.
Now, do you still have time to go in and kind of like take passes at scripts or add stuff or add jokes?
Yeah, yeah. I was supposed to do one this week, but then I my schedule didn't happen. But yeah, I still do it, and it's still very frustrating. Especially when you see friends of yours who have kind of established a persona in films, and you see them wanting to maybe break out of that persona a little bit, and you see the studio guys just going, no, let's just give them, let's do this. Do the thing that, I'll give you an example. This was years ago, so I can say this because I don't even know if this is going to happen, but, and he wasn't even in the room when he was doing it, but we were all doing, a bunch of us doing a table punch up on a remake of the Secret Life of Walter Mitty.
Okay.
And at the time... Owen Wilson was going to be in it. This was years ago, like early aughts. So the main note was like, well, now that, because they wrote a Walter Mitty script and it was actually pretty good, but now Owen Wilson's attached to play Walter Mitty. So the studio is like, we got to have him doing more of that cool Owen Wilson stuff, like just
Walter Mitty.
Yeah, but like you know, putting people in their place and great insults and great lines. So we're like, so in other words, he's not Walter Mitty. Like Walter Mitty is this milquetoast that doesn't talk. like he doesn't. If he's Owen Wilson, then he's not Walter Mitty. He's this cool blonde guy who's laid back and always has the right thing to say. They're like, just make him Owen Wilson.
Oh, okay.
There's no reason for him to fantasize. And so why would he fantasize?
Then they drop the whole Walter Mitty concept, and it just turns into one of those weird titled films like Keeping It Snazzy or whatever.
Yeah, exactly.
This is what happens.
Too much information. When's that being made? You know there's a script called Too Much Information.
TMI.
Well, yeah.
That's What She Said comes out this year.
Oh, does it really?
What?
Yep. Movie called That's What She Said.
What?
For those of you who can't hear Matthew Myra because his microphone's not working, That's What She Said is coming out as a movie. So basically, that sort of douche cattle call, That's What She Said, is turning into
apparently
a movie.
Let's all just go pitch Thanks for Sharing later on today. We'll sell that in 2 minutes.
You've seen Bob Odenkirk's Bob Pitches a Movie video, right? Where he plays the executive and he's pitching a movie himself, and the executive keeps offering him water, and he's like, "No, I don't want water."
Yeah, yeah.
It's like, okay, so it takes place in Wyoming. Wait a minute, do hipsters know about this place? Yes, yeah, everyone knows about it. It's a state. It's such a fucking great. It's just like, and also you just sense the years of frustration from him, like that he is expressing in this video.
Yeah, well, that's the hard part about whenever they make movies about Hollywood, they're always written by writers who have been through those years. So there's never like fun, creative Hollywood stories. It's always about listen to this when I dealt with this douchebag and he was an asshole to me. There's no like, yeah, we went in and the executive was there. Those executives do exist.
Yeah,
you know, they're out there. But the thing is, that doesn't make a good movie when you're like, yeah, I hooked up with this guy and we were both creative and he upped my game and I upped his and we made a good movie.
Everything worked.
Yeah. But so the Portrait of Hollywood, the only one that makes a good movie is when it's about the assholes.
So did you come down here to LA with the exodus of San Francisco comics?
Yeah.
That all came to work on Trashed, the first MTV show I worked on?
No, that one I did not come down here for. I wanted to still stay. I felt like I wanted to have one more year on the road and really, really work as a stand-up and get more solid that way. I wasn't ready to be in an office all day yet. Mm-hmm. And then, so I went back up, but then I got an offer, me and Blaine from Comedy Central, to come down and write a series of short films and star in them. That was in the spring of 1994. So we all lived in this house in the valley. And then we moved back to San Francisco again, August of that year. And then we got a writing job. Because at that point, I went back thinking, there's all these rooms in San Francisco. I want to keep working out. There's this really creative scene. And then when I got up there, from August to April, August of 94 to April of 95, all the rooms shut down.
Oh, my God. Was that because most everyone left?
Not only everyone left, it just got so oversaturated. And all the rooms were run so badly, mm-hmm. basically, that there were only two left, which was Cobb's and the Punchline.
Yep.
And everything else was gone. And I said, okay, well now. And also, I remember this very clearly. Blaine and I went on the road and did a club called Slapsticks with an X.
Mixing it up.
In a mall in Baltimore. And the mall, everything in the mall was closed except the comedy club.
Oh,
the whole mall
God damn
had
it,
gone
that's
under.
Such a bummer.
So you had to walk through an abandoned two-level shopping mall.
Where you're
to go
sure
upstairs.
You're going to be attacked by
yeah,
zombies.
Exactly. It was horrifying. I was amazed that the baseball furies didn't come out and just beat us with baseball bats or mimes on roller skates. It was horrible. And we were in the club and we had been submitting, you know, we took our short films and we'd also written some sketches and we had given them to our manager. Like, I had no idea how you got on a show. I just didn't know what that process was. It was like, if there's any shows looking for writers, I guess, do you send this out? Or because I thought if I sent it out, I wouldn't look legitimate,
right.
You know? They said, yeah, we'll submit you for some shows. So Blaine and I were at this club, and we're starting to get calls like, hey, there's a show that might want to talk to you guys. And so we're going, now, do we want to, like, we're comedians, man. I don't want to sit in an office and just, you know, do we just give up?
By the way, mid-90s, worst time to be touring for comedy.
Oh, it was horrible. And we're like, well, I want to be like Maury Amsterdam when the Dick Van Dyke show, is that how we're going to end up, you know, and we're just yammering about that. And that week was the worst week we had ever done. And by the end of the week, we're like, we're any job. we're done.
It.
That week was so that week started with on a Wednesday night, a bunch of people showed up. Six people showed up so drunk. They weren't even making it sound like human speech, like that kind of drunk, kind of drunk that you see like on YouTube videos, like, look at this drunk guy.
The kind of drunk you would find in an abandoned mall.
Yes. And they had all gotten drunk before the show and had passes from 98 Rock.
Ugh.
They're in Baltimore. Free passes. They're not paying for anything.
The best audience.
They all come in. They all order these small Cokes. Just small Cokes because they're not paying anything. And as they're coming in, they're ripping pictures off the wall and yelling. As they're coming in, and I went to this manager, Chris, and said, hey, why don't we throw these guys out because this is going to be a terrible show. And he lit into me. These people are drinking. You don't fucking tell me who to put in my show. Oh, everything's got to be so perfect for you. You're a fucking comedian. You do. Like, I mean, screaming at me. And these people were, like, knocking over other chairs and yelling and screaming, and other tables were screaming at them. And then they had to call the police in and have them arrested, and everyone was getting refunds, and that whole show was a disaster. But this guy was, like, there, and it, like, because he was, like, hopefully they'll keep drinking, and they all get in and get a round of Cokes. So he doesn't make any money, loses all this money. And then by Friday, he calls Blaine and I into his office and said, he's like, I got these six comment cards. These are after all these shows we've done. These people hated you.
Jesus.
And we're like,
Christ.
What are the other comment cards? And there's this huge stack. And I go, what are the other comment cards say? And he's like, God damn it, Oswald. You're the worst fucking comedian ever. He goes, Blaine, you're closing all these shows. Patton, you're a fucking joke. I don't know what the... I can't have any negative comment cards.
Oh, my God.
And then I just said... That was the... After that show, we called our manager and said, get us that interview immediately.
Was that... And you got... Because you guys worked on Mad, right?
That was Mad TV.
Yep.
Yeah.
The first couple seasons, maybe?
I was there the first two seasons, and then they justifiably didn't bring me back because I was such a douchebag. I was so frustrated because... I was frustrated because Mr. Show was on the air, and, you know, I... So it was like, I'm in this place where we have to deal with, you know, all these crazy network notes and all these... Just everything but doing a comedy show.
Mm-hmm.
And then over on Mr. Show, I'm seeing, like, the best sketch comedy being written and performed. And it was just like this... And I felt like the scene in is it Stardust Memories where Woody Allen's on the train with all the sad people and he looks over and there's the train with Sharon Stone and all these awesome people and that's pulling out and he's just like, oh my God, I'm on the wrong train.
And every day you go to work, you just feel your heart shrivel a little bit more.
God. And what was so frustrating was there were like really good writers on Mad TV, but we just couldn't get through the network filter.
Mm-hmm.
Actually, I always said that Mr. Show and Mad TV were these perfect opposites at the time in that every now and then on Mr. Show, a bad sketch would get through, like something pedestrian or kind of hacky. Every now and then, it was rare, because they either got so busy or they were so pressed for time that they just didn't have time to sometimes look at the stuff and go, oh boy, you know, that might not be up to our standard. And at Mad TV, every now and then, because they were so busy, a good sketch would get through because they were so busy dealing with, you know, well, we got Jamie Farr as a guest star, so we got like. They would be dealing with the absolute non-essentials.
Would they always be like, hey, we need an X-Files parody this week?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Absolutely. We have a, you know, we're doing a, it was just.
I did a guest star on that show. I wonder, you might have been there. They did a, they had me guest star on Mad, and the sketch was Ozark Mountain Singled Out.
Where, I believe I was there. And I think Blaine wrote that.
Blaine wrote that. I didn't realize Blaine wrote that.
I think he did.
And it was.
Your words carefully, Hardwick.
No.
He might have. I'm not sure.
But, you know, and then at the end, I think it was David Herman and Nicole
Sullivan.
Sullivan. And then they end up together, and then, but they're brother and sister.
Right, of course.
And then there's like chaw spitting and something else, and then a commercial.
There were so many great writers on that show. Lauren Dombrowski and Gary Campbell and Brian Hart. Brian Hart and Gary Campbell from Kids in the Hall. You know, so you would see them like... I was actually telling someone this last night. You ever know, like, there's that... One of the reasons I think that this country is kind of going in the wrong direction is we have to constantly stop and deal with the dumb people's questions. The people like the Michelle Bachmans and the... you know, where's the birth certificate? Like, are we really going to stop
right
and deal with this
How
dumb
come
question?
You're not wearing a pin? Okay, we're trying to balance.
Please,
the...
can't we move forward? There's so many other things to deal with. So that would happen so much at Mad TV. There was a there was like this young writer program, I guess, and it was a friend of one of the cast members, and they hired this guy. And this guy was one of the single dumbest human beings. And he would always, in the network note session, he would want to bring up like, oh, I've got a question. It was always the dumbest question. But the network would go, well, I mean, if that confused him, maybe we need, and you can see all the writers like, we're going to spend an hour down this cul-de-sac now. For no reason.
And do shows now just hire a mouth breather to see how well the jokes are playing?
Maybe they did. I just remember there was a sketch that Gary Campbell wrote. Simple sketch. It's a guy giving a eulogy at a funeral, and the guy who he's eulogizing, you realize, died owing him $15, and he's pissed about it. And that is coming out in the eulogy. Uh-huh. Get it? Simple. Yeah. Read the sketch. It's funny. And now we're going through note session. Here goes his hand. $15. I mean, who cares? That's not, I mean, I think the guy should have died owing him like $50,000. Then he's got like a legitimate gripe. And you can literally see the writers like, please, let's not address this. No. And then we're like, no, is that a valid argument? No, maybe the, and we spent that's an hour of my life gone. Gone on a dumb guy.
Like trying to explain something funny to a hamster.
It was so frustrating. Well, it was so, and I was like, and I just remember being that Brian Posehn and I wrote a pilot years ago for two guys I'm not going to mention. And it was a parody of a web soup talk soup style show. Yep. Where it was a guy hosting and we would just make up the shows he was showing clips from.
Okay.
You know, stuff. So, one of the fake shows was an Entertainment Tonight style show, and they're doing a Before They Were Stars segment. So it's one about Harrison Ford, and at the time it's like, Harrison Ford is the star of such films as 6 Days, 7 Nights, and Random Hearts, but did you know that back in 1977, he was in a little Robots and Monsters science fiction movie that I bet he wishes would go away? And we show a clip from Star Wars, and it looks like a 700th generation VHS tape. Like, it's hard to find this thing. And their note was, fellas, I mean, Star Wars was a huge, that made his career.
Oh, come on!
And I think you got to, like, make up a, we're just,
I give up.
And that was an hour trying to explain to them, you do not see the joke that is.
But it's, you've definitely chosen I think more rewarding but more difficult comedy path, which is I am going to write exactly the kind of stuff I want to do, and if you fucking people don't get it, then don't get it. And so, Ben, because you've done that, now you have an insane thought. Like, you found your nerds.
It took some time, but it was worth it. Well, I had an office at Dakota Films for a while when I was writing, and I was working on another pilot that Brian and I were pitching. This is a different one, the one that we actually had fun writing.
Super Nerds?
Super Nerds, which we really, Super Nerds. So we would, Dakota Films would get, and any film company, I guess, because now friends of mine have then since sent me stuff, because I got so obsessed with this, people would send in their movie pitches, their treatments of what they wanted to do for movies. And they were just the style of writing and the, yes, it's terrible writing, but it's so passionate. And there's part of it was like so, it would literally read like the guy's going, if a guy, like, imagine a super cop, but then, werewolves. And so, like, he would literally write them like that.
This guy.
Yeah, so I started getting obsessed with those, and so I wrote all those Eric Blevins movie pitches, we're doing the paperback version of my book now. They want to do an appendix of all the Eric Blevins.
Oh, that's genius.
Movie treatments, which, I've read other movie treatments that are just the most bloodless, calculated, this person has been keeping up with, Maxim and stuff and right. FHM and is putting the appropriate phrases to sell this movie.
Yep.
And there's nothing, but these strangled, part of me, like, if I was like a weird George Soros billionaire, Actually, well, no, I should be trying to help the world, but I know that I'd probably be an asshole, and I would finance getting these movies made as they are written, not changing a single word, and just creating this subculture of "we will shoot your movie."
Oh, that would be
genius.
What's
your idea?
I love that scene, the big picture where he's his world's falling apart, and then he ends up at that construction site.
Yes!
And he's like, "We here at Brown Entertainment,
oh god, that
take the
so
market
great.
Research approach," and then they come up with this. Abe and the Babe, Abe Ruth and Babe Lincoln, the two greatest. So I feel like there's just a bunch of guys
now,
like,
"How much do you have to invest?"
"Hey Abe, you almost done with that bat? I sure would have hit me some baseballs." So now I just feel like there's people like, okay, laser pussies. People love lasers and people love vaginas.
Well, there do seem to be movies that are coming out that they feel like darts have been thrown at a board, and they're just looking at, you know, I'm amazed they don't use the bullseye in the back of EW to pitch new movies.
It's incredible, like, because I feel like there's a golden age of television happening right now, and it is inversely proportional to what's happening in film.
I've said this for years now, the TV, I haven't seen a film in a theater in almost a year. No, I went and saw True Grit at Christmas time, and that's been it.
Mm-hmm.
Because, everyone's TV now is like being in a little, you know, multiplex anyway.
Right.
And B, that the stuff that's on TV is so terrific. There really is. Like, Justified is
such a good show.
So goddamn well written. Yeah.
You know, when I first saw when Justified first came on, I was like, okay, Seth Bullock without an old West town. But I think he's great. I think Timothy Oliphant's great on the show. And
fantastic. And here's how great Justified is. You know, like, they do the overall story arcs, which is the fashion in TV now. And I love that. I love it because you're watching a giant epic thing. But Justified is so confident now in its writing that they will do single episodes. I don't know if you saw the one last season with, it's the guy who played Cameron in Ferris Bueller's Day Off. What's his name?
Alan Ruck.
He has a single self-contained episode where it's more about him. It's almost like Timothy Oliphant is the special guest star in the episode.
Oh, wow.
He's barely in it. He plays a fugitive. And it is so, and it's a self-contained episode, has nothing to do with the overall arc. And I just remember going, if they can write hours that good, then maybe they don't need to worry about these overall arcs, because this is genius.
For some reason, I don't know why, but I keep playing, whenever the Justified credits start, for some reason, I play the Firefly theme in my head. I don't know why. Take my land. Take my land. You can't take the sky from me.
When Deep Space Nine came out, and it was like Star Trek with an overall story arc, which had never happened before.
Right, right.
It wasn't just these one-off episodes. It was like this whole Dominion War, and it was like...
Yeah.
Well, I want to take a hard right turn, because we don't have a lot of time left with you, and there's a couple of things I want to cover.
Oh.
Which is, you are, you know, in When I sort of look at the landscape of comics, you are one of the most prolific comics. Like, you and Louie and Paul F. are these three guys that every fucking time I see you, you have a new half hour, and I don't know. I mean, do you know, we had a conversation years ago, and
yeah.
you said, well, you should never really sit down to write comedy, but I don't know if you still feel that way, or if your process has changed, or like, how do you... What is it? What is it about your brain?
You know what? When I said you shouldn't sit down to write comedy, that was me trying to justify my process. I think that you should embrace whatever your process is, but do it every day.
Yeah.
So my thing is, I go on stage and I talk. Now, I can't go on stage every night now, but I make sure at least twice a week, either I'm being paid for it, or if I'm not going on the road, I will find a little room and go up and just try new stuff. I jot down ideas. And one thing I'm thinking of doing after, because I'm recording a new album in May, I want to see what would happen if I totally reverse my process and actually sit and write comedy and see what will happen that way. Because I may have to start changing my process, because I'm going to be able to go on stage less and less and less.
Mm-hmm.
And maybe I need to learn to write more and more and more, because, you know, my way of doing comedy is I go on stage a lot and I just refine it, refine it, refine it. And I always, and also, the minute something gets recorded on an album, it's gone. I just don't do it again on stage.
That's it.
Yeah. Every now and then, like, sometimes I've been in rooms where people are like, they'll scream like famous bowls, and which is very flattering. I know right. that sounds like a humble brag, but I mean, I've had that happen where I'm like, well, I can't not do it. But at the same time, it's like anything that you start to do in your act that becomes like a signature thing, I think you should get rid of and, you know, do something else. Like I've noticed, like ever since I said failure pile in a sadness bowl.
Oh, yeah, the KFC bowl.
Yeah, the word sadness will start showing up in other bits as a noun, verb, mm-hmm. adjective.
Yep.
So I'm going out of my way not to like, okay, that worked for that one bit, but I don't want that to become like my thing. I don't want to have a singular voice.
Do you feel like in order to stay fresh, you have to constantly make yourself uncomfortable to yeah. in order to sort of keep your brain working?
Well, you know what? Two things you have to do is, you do have to make yourself a little bit uncomfortable. And the other thing you have to do, and this took me a long time to realize this, because I used to be very competitive and jealous of other people. I used to be jealous of Louis C.K. and Paul F. Tompkins. You have to be delighted with other people doing stuff.
Mm-hmm.
That will keep you fresh. If you are delighted with the new, and if you're delighted with the competition and genuinely are laughing at stuff and let yourself laugh at anybody and anything and just lose, just strip away your judgment and your kind of cliquishness and be open to everything, that will make you more present and you'll write even more stuff. So now like I feel like I've come full circle where I'm so excited now that there are so many great podcasts and there are so many great comedians right now, because I'm realizing that's what's going to make me funnier. What's not going to make me funnier is me convincing myself that I'm the funniest guy around and no one else is as funny as me.
Yeah.
Because once you do that, then you stop.
Right.
But if I feel like, oh my God, everyone is just firing on all cylinders, it wakes you up.
Yeah.
I mean, you go to the UCB on a Tuesday night for Comedy Death Ray, and you're like, I'm always the least funny guy in the room, and I love it.
Well, I always get a little jealous of the young kids who are getting to pay $8 for that UCB show or the Meltdown show now, Jonah's Meltdown show. I just want to say to them, guys, do you even understand? Because I had that when I was at UCLA. I would go to Uncabaret and watch.
Yep.
You and Blaine and Cross and Janine and Posehn and Dana Gould and, you know, before anyone had any idea who any of you were, and I really felt like, oh my God, this is a treasure. This is a comedy that I get that's mine. And I really hope that the young people that are going to see those shows at UCB now really understand like how many great comics there
are. When I was like 16 or 17 in Massachusetts, I would go on like bobanddavid.com and see the Death Ray lineups for $5. And I would go, oh.
Yeah. Well, I hope they do. There are times I despair because I'll go on a special thing and other people will, you know, Paul F. Tompkins will be on the road or, you know, Maria Bamford will be doing a show somewhere. And then people go like, $25 for a ticket. I mean, I don't know. I mean, I see these guys. This is where the people that you like, they're out there earning money. That's how they earn their living.
Yeah.
You are getting special dispensation living in L.A. right now.
Right.
But don't act like, I get it for $5 here, I should get it that much everywhere.
Right.
No.
No, because no, we have to shouldn't. Travel and
yeah.
we have to.
We have to actually eat food so we don't die of starvation. We can keep doing comedy for you guys. You know? So, UCB is it's fantastic. But don't, these guys that are just like, $30 a ticket? Are you kidding? No, not at all.
That's, I mean, when you start, especially for us, because I'm just kind of making the jump to small theaters.
Yeah.
And you realize, like, well, the ticket prices do have to be $25, $30 because it costs a certain amount of money just to turn the lights on.
Exactly.
But the upside is, in the long run, it's less because if you see us at a comedy club, there's a 2-drink minimum.
Right.
You're going to end up paying more in alcohol. And so it actually is less money to go see an isolated show at a theater where you're just paying the ticket price.
You know, take a look around at what some other, again, I'm not going to name names, but look around at what some other certain comedians are charging for their shows.
45, and, 75.
Yeah. And so when I'm charging 25 and 30, just, you know, I'm keeping it as low as I possibly can. I know that I talk to these venues, but I'm in this to make a profit. I'm not, you know, and by the way, here's what's also kind of strange. When I do these theater shows for, you know, 20 for what I think is a fair price, I do an hour plus.
Yeah.
I get very few requests for comps or anything like that. Mm-hmm. When you're doing comedians and comedy, and I was keeping it to like $15 sometimes, that's when they would go, oh man, just get us in for free then. Like, wait a minute, I'm keeping this so low that I'm literally not making any money.
Yeah, that's great. So you're already not making money, so just get us in for free.
Fine, then just get me in for free. just get me in for free. So now it's weird. Like, once you take it above a certain level, people are like, all right, they'll either pay or they won't.
Right.
But they won't, like, demand they get it for nothing. It's just, I don't,
25, it's, you know, I'm super excited, and I hope the experiment works. And by the time this podcast goes up, I will have already done a bunch of the dates. But I don't know if you'll appreciate this or not. I named my tour the Chaotic Good Tour. now, I know, which leads me to, it does get brought up to me in interviews, like, so you played D&D with comedians? And I'm like, yes, Patton and Brian and Blaine Kapach and Jerry Duggan. But honestly, when I look back, those were some of the most... I look back on that time with such fondness.
Oh, God, yeah.
Those every Sunday of just... I might have been for like a year and a half, 2 years of just meeting with you guys every Sunday and playing my Lawful Good Wizard.
It was so hilarious that the... Not only was the game fun... But like any other things where guys get together, it was just us starting to just bitch and moan about everything in our careers and in life. You know, that's why we were doing it.
Yeah.
Yeah. Except that we would pause and go, and my dwarf attempts to, you know.
Oh, but Patton used to write these, had a drunken dwarf. I think his name was Stumphammer.
Stumphammer.
And Stumphammer used to get hammered and write these songs. And you wrote one of my favorite, you wrote a parody to Seasons in the Sun. And
hey, you know what I should do? Why don't I just send you the lyrics and you just record it and play it on the show? I'll just email you the lyrics. I mean, you're a musician. You can bang it out and just sing it.
You don't want to sing it?
I can. Well, we can arrange for me to sing it. I'll send you the lyrics and you tell me what you want to do.
Okay.
Get a mandolin and a lute and a flute.
That would be so much fun. Oh yeah, because you. Patton, you inspired the Hard and Firm song "She Named the Pony Jesus."
That's right.
Which is a song I greatly enjoyed. You said. You did a breakdown of the Christmas Shoes.
And that line, which I took that line out once you recorded the song, which I was describing the singer's voice.
Yeah.
And he's doing that over-sexualized, even though I'm singing in a Christian rock band, I will lay the pipe into you, ladies, make no mistake. So it's that kind of, you know, manly, and she named the pony Jesus.
And you did that
voice, just like the... This is a guy, I think he's trying to get laid.
Yeah, it was a duo. It was Furman and I dressed at, were these characters called Dick Lord and Purpose.
Dick Lord
and Purpose. And Furman was just Purpose. And I was Dick Lord. It was the most sexualized version of a Christian.
Yeah.
Maybe, you know what? I will tack that song on the end of the, I will tack She Named the Pony Jesus on the end of this podcast.
Especially when you do the, I'm so passionate, I can't even pronounce my consonants.
Yeah.
And you'll know the part when I'm talking. When you hear it, you'll go, oh, he's doing the classic Christian country. I'm so passionate, I'm just making vowel sounds.
God, I would
get
so mad at people for like, Christmas Shoes is a sweet song. Like, it is a heavy-handed, awful.
And it's mean-spirited.
So mean. Anyway, those D&D times. I bought your book. It's Zombie Spaceship Wasteland. Is that correct?
Yes, it is.
I bought it for the iPad, and I will probably read it on one of the many planes I will be on.
You will be on many planes on the Chaotic Good Tour.
But I do, and I hope, because my book, The Nerdist Way, does sort of kind of like jab at the point, like, well, we've become a culture of nerds. And I know that you say the same thing, and I hope... You don't think I took that from you, but it is something that I have been thinking for a long time.
I think
and
a lot of people, I mean, it's a thing that's in the air right now.
Yeah.
And, you know, I think it was just timing, but I think a lot of people have been thinking it and just not even think, just feeling it. I mean, it's so obvious.
How do you feel about it? Like, how do you feel about 125,000 people at San Diego Comic-Con? Do you think it's, you know, overall it's good for nerd business that we've become this culture of accepted creatures?
You get old enough to know that every single thing, punk rock, hip hop, everything becomes mainstream. It has to, so that something else can react to it.
Mm-hmm.
If it constantly stays underground, staying underground and staying edgy is just as stagnating as staying mainstream and bloated.
Right.
So you...
I mean, this goes back to exactly what you were talking about with writing before. Like, you need to kind of mix it up.
Exactly, yeah.
So Zombie Spaceship Wasteland, is it a collection of, is it sort of like a like stories of...
It's a collection of personal essays about my life and then short comedic bits, because you can tell that I wasn't quite committed to, you know, writing personal stuff. And then the one that I'm working on now, that will come out probably in 2013, I'm just going to, now I've, it's like I've exercised the goofy essay portion and I'm just going to write like personal stuff.
I think,
you know.
I think when you say that, though, when you say when it's going to come out, you have to say it like it's really futuristic. Like, it comes out in the year 2013. Because that doesn't sound like, yeah. It's only 2 years away. It sounds like it's yeah. In the distant future.
Yeah, we'll say it like we're in like one of those Italian science fiction flicks made in the 60s. It's in the year 2013 when a cat is president. And, oh, come on. Really? Wait a minute, this guy who does Speed Racer dubbed this. You ever watch those like Mario Bava movies when they get dubbed into English? Apparently the same 8 guys that dubbed everything back then. So it's like there's an English dub version of Black Sunday, and it's the cast of Speed Racer.
Oh, wow.
I'm not kidding. It's like, well, that's Speed, and there's Pops. And there, what the hell? Like, it's totally...
Oh, look out, Speed! Oh, look out!
The devil. Oh,
do they think Americans say "oh" in front of everything? Speed. Oh, my chimp. I have a weird chimp because this is animation and we need to have an animal. How has the Ratatouille experience been for you? Just in terms of, is it? It's sort of separate from, has it driven people out to your shows? I just remember those great stories, which I'm sure were painful at the time when you were on King of Queens and you would go you'd go to the Red States and King and Spence fans would show up, and then you know you would do the George Bush's Hitler jokes.
Yeah, well, also that was my fault because I was not controlling my advertising and the promotion. I just figured I was so lazy. I was like, yeah, just say I'm on TV, boom, they'll come out. And not knowing that people said, oh, King of Queens, our family enjoys that at 8 p.m. on Monday nights.
Right.
And now, you know, so that's what got me going. I need to let people. So luckily with Ratatouille, because I think it's because it's Pixar and because.
Brad Bird.
Unless you're the dumbest human being, people have to know that he's in an adult nightclub. Like, there's alcohol here.
Right.
He's probably not doing a G-rated show.
Right.
I probably shouldn't bring, and also the little kids who would like Ratatouille, they're never up that late. So I, for the most part, I haven't had anyone go, we thought you were this nice rat, and you know, but I did have families with like teenagers come out to see me, my shows because of King of Queens.
Oh yeah.
Like 12 and 13 year olds would go.
Well, there was I remember.
And I had a guy in Richmond, Indiana yelled, do Spence. When I was 35 minutes into my set, and it was going horrible, and they hated me, and it wasn't even angry. It was like this, do, like, come on, man. Do Spence. Enough's enough.
Now, like, at that point, are you hurting inside, or are you like, well, these people are not my audience, and I'll just get through it and move on?
I mean, I was hurting a little bit in that I realized how much it was my fault. How much I was like, oh, I didn't do the work here to let the people know you're not getting a, you know, 8 p.m. sitcom. So that's when I had to really sit down and go, okay, how do I do this differently so I don't run into these walkouts, basically, these mass walkouts, man.
What was the story of you? It was a George Bush as Hitler story.
That was in Pittsburgh. Oh, boy. That's when, though, although that was because they got me so angry, a guy actually said, why don't you take your faggot ass back to Hollywood?
Oh.
So then I said, okay, nah, I'm going to cause a walkout now because fuck these people.
Yeah.
And also because they're pounding on the table and going, Bush rocks. And these are people in this, you know, struggling, decrepit steel town whose kids are being sent to war on the lie of a draft dodger, basically. Like, there were so many wrong things going on.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, they're victims, but what the fuck? Like, I thought maybe a shock to the system or something. I'm such an arrogant asshole, but I just thought maybe that'll do it. And then it went even worse. That's when I did the Hitler thing, and which is playing Capaccio's line. But at the point, it just felt like I want to just throw gasoline on this gasoline fire and see what happens.
Where Patton said,
I just said, I go, folks, you know, I have problems with George Bush, but. You know, I don't agree with these people that are. I'm comparing them with like Darth Vader and Lex Luthor, fictional figures. There's other assholes in the media that are comparing them to Hitler. And I think that's ridiculous. And I actually got like some applause, like, here, here. I'm like, here we go. Like, here we go. I go, they're nothing. I mean, Hitler was elected, and then that's oh, they just, oh.
But that doesn't, oh, here, that doesn't happen anymore.
Here's another frustrating story. I'll end on this, because unfortunately I have to go.
You gotta go, yeah.
I did a college in St. Louis, and it was a university. And again, this was back in my, book, how much money? Perfect. I'm like, I don't care. Great. And then this was months down the road, I'm doing this. And I run into David Cross. He goes, what are you up to? I'm like, I'm doing this and this. And I named the college I'm doing. And he said, oh, God, there was a huge walkout during my show that they're like a strict Jesuit college.
Oh, boy.
And so you better let them know what it is you do. You know, like, it's kind of R-rated adult. So I'm like, oh, no. So we sent them. I had my manager send them my CDs and my DVDs. And went, this is what he does. And this is the act he'll be, you know, he'll be doing an act similar to this. And, you know, I'd be doing all new stuff, not on those albums, but it will be on that, you know, it'll mm-hmm. be that adult. And they went, that's totally cool. They immediately said, it's totally cool. And then I said, they didn't watch them. They responded too quickly. Please make sure they watch it. And I want them to say that these bits are okay, you know. So then the next day they called and said, oh, that's fine. It's totally cool. You know, and I'm the whole time like, this does not sound good. but it was a lot of money and I really needed it. So I fly out there. This guy, student coordinator, meets me. Yeah, so looking forward. We got a sold-out room tonight. Yeah, thanks. Yeah, a lot of King of Queens fans at this college.
Boy. They red flag.
They're really loving it. I'm like, oh, yeah. But, I mean, you guys got my CDs and DVDs, right? Oh, yeah, sure. No, we loved them. No, they know. They're college kids. They're college kids. Although, oh, so he goes, they're college kids. They're totally cool. I go, okay, great. That's like the silence. Because, I mean, if you had to do a G-rated act, I mean, that's, you could totally do that, though, right? I mean, that's all you comedians, you can change your stuff,
you
right?
Had like, to.
No, because that's why we sent you my stuff, to tell you that that's the stuff I do. And, you know, I don't do a G-rated thing. Oh, and when we watched it, we loved it. I mean, you know, it's just that, you know, it's freshman orientation, and it's a lot of parents are in the audience.
Oh, Jesus Christ.
I go, well, then it's probably going to be, you know, I don't know how the show's going to go. I don't know how the show's going to go then. He goes, so maybe this would be a good time, like, you know, if you have, like, G-rated stuff, you could like, do that. Like, no, he kept doing this passive-aggressive, like, maybe you could.
And it, how did the show go?
There were some walkouts, but not a lot. But there were, like, a lot of parents getting up and.
That's colleges, though. Like, you show up to do a college, and like, hey, we just started handing out flyers at 6.
Yeah,
like,
exactly.
But
what? Don't they know? Yeah. So, and then they got, like, some angry letters from parents. But at that point, I felt totally cool just telling them, hey, fuck off.
Yeah.
I went out of my way. I did everything I could. So that one I didn't feel bad about.
Well, I know you have to go. Zombie Spaceship Wasteland is available now, and you should definitely pick it up. I've enjoyed your Wired stuff well. That's so much fun. And, you know, it's just nice when you, I mean, I've known you forever, so it's always nice. It's nice to see your friends, you know, carve their own path and make their own thing happen. And, you know, because it's definitely inspiring to people like me who, you know,
well,
like,
you've done the same thing.
Well, I know,
you
but
totally
I feel like...
You totally did the same thing.
I don't know. I just feel like I'm copying guys like you and Paul.
Copying guys like Cross. I mean, we all... look, if I see something that works and it's going to help me do the stuff that I want to do, why not... Those methods are good.
So just really quickly before you go, just a quick list of influences, past and contemporary.
Well, past, you know, people like Jonathan Winters and especially Richard Pryor... Even the earlier albums when he's transitioning,
mm-hmm.
like albums like Are You Serious, where he's not quite the Richard Pryor that we got to know.
Yep.
And then, but then once I started doing comedy, I mean, right before when I started doing comedy, there were people that I hadn't met yet personally, people like Dana Gould and Bill Hicks and Cross and people like that. And then, but once I started doing comedy, it's just been all my friends, man. It's all my friends and what they do, you know? And when I say I'm copying Cross, I mean that idea of going into small rock clubs and mm-hmm. doing it that way and building up your own audience that way. I'm like, oh, fuck, I'm going to do that. And then, you know, when I saw how people were starting to build websites and use Twitter and social networking, I was very much against that. And then I saw that, oh, no, that can actually be really clever and mm-hmm. smart and fun. So, you know, everyone, I've had a few inspirations in my time, but for the most part, I try to be influenced by really smart, funny people.
Yeah.
And not just people that are successful.
And
because if I just followed the examples of people that are just purely successful and rich, I think I'd be a pretty awful comedian right now. You know?
Well, fortunately, we have a cornucopia of wonderful comedians to draw from.
We're very lucky to be in the circle that we're in.
Yeah. I totally agree. By the way, Albert Brooks started tweeting.
And we started talking back and forth on Twitter. Did you see that?
No, you did, because he tweeted at me and I shit myself.
Yeah, he tweeted me like 3 times.
Oh, that's so awesome.
I had like a heart attack.
Have you met him?
No, never met him. I don't know what I'd say if I met him.
Oh, he must know who you are.
I bet he doesn't.
I'll bet he does.
My friend said that he met him coming out of a Ralph's years ago, and he walked up and he said, "Oh my God, Albert Brooks, I think you're a genius." And Albert goes, "Do you? Here, take my change. Just have my change." And it was just like the most perfect. My friend said if he had done anything else, I would have not respected him. Like that was the best. And my other I wasn't here for this, but a friend of mine went to a talk that Gore Vidal gave.
Okay.
Talked for an hour. And then, hang on, let me take a little water for this. Spoke for an hour and then took questions from the audience. And so in the audience, Albert Brooks is one of the audience members. So people are, you know, Casper Weinberger and Ronald Reagan, and he's dishing on them and just boom, boom, boom. That goes on for half an hour. And Gore Vidal, "Well, we're very near the end. Who else do you want me to tear apart? Just give me a name. Who should I rip asunder?" And then Albert Brooks yells, "Della Reese."
Oh, I love that guy.
And with that, I'm going to run.
Thanks, Patton Oswalt.
Thank you, Chris Hardwick.
Sorry you couldn't be here, Jonah Ray. Sorry, Matt Meyer, you were off mic. enjoy your burrito, everybody.
Now leaving Nerdist.com. Enjoy your burrito.
This episode of the Nerdist Podcast was brought to you by Hover.com. Hover is domain name registration and management that is simple. For 10% off your new domain, go to hover.com/Nerdist.
Behind every successful business is a story, and some of them might surprise you. Like how Chobani's first yogurt factory was discovered on a piece of junk mail. Or how the founder of the multi-million dollar cosmetics brand Drunk Elephant was told by everyone, including her own mother, that the name sounded like a dive bar. I'm Guy Raz, and on my show How I Built This, I talk to founders behind the world's biggest companies and brands to learn the real stories of how they built them. In each episode, you'll hear entrepreneurs share moments of doubt and failure and talk about how they were able to overcome them on their way to the top. How I Built This is like a masterclass in innovation and creativity, a how-to guide for navigating life's challenges from the people who've done it all. Follow How I Built This on the Wondery app or wherever you get your podcasts. You can listen to How I Built This early and ad-free right now on Wondery Plus.